Now, the first Nidana, in some ways the most important of all, though they're all very, very important, is avidya, or ignorance. Not ignorance in the intellectual sense, so much as what we may describe as a lack of spiritual awareness. Deprivation of spiritual awareness, or even if you like, spiritual consciousness and spiritual being. So avidya, ignorance in this sense, is the direct antithesis of bodhi or enlightenment. Some weeks ago we saw in the course of the lecture on evolution, lower and higher, we saw that bodhi or enlightenment, or as is also called nirvana, is the goal of the whole evolutionary process, especially of the whole process of the higher evolution. And on our chart, which some of you may remember, it was represented by the symbol for infinity. Now, in the same way, avidya, ignorance, lack of spiritual awareness, represents all that lies behind us, as it were, or if you like, below us, in that evolutionary process. If enlightenment represents the goal, then avidya represents the depth, as it were, from which we have come. If enlightenment represents the mountain top, the mountain peak, then avidya represents the valleys or the lowlands from which gradually we are emerging and which lie wrapped in darkness. More specifically, avidya, or ignorance, or lack of spiritual awareness, is made up of various wrong views, wrong ways of looking at things. A number of these are specified in the canonical texts. For instance, the wrong view which consists in seeing the conditioned as unconditioned, thinking that anything mundane, anything phenomenal, can last forever. It's not an intellectual conviction, of course, but an unconscious assumption. We behave as though certain things were going to last forever. We cling on to them, therefore, and we're unhappy when we finally have to surrender them. Another example, another specific instance of avidya, is belief in a personal God, a supreme being. Some of you may be rather surprised to learn that Buddhism lists this as an example of spiritual unawareness, but Buddhism, as I tried to explain a couple of weeks ago in the talk at Caxton Hall on Buddhism and psychoanalysis, Buddhism, like psychoanalysis itself, tends to regard the God figure, the idea of a supreme being, a creator, as a sort of projected father figure, a sort of glorified representation or the father of our childhood, on which we depend for help when we get into difficulties. So Buddhism tends, therefore, to regard belief of this sort, and dependence of this sort, as a manifestation of spiritual immaturity and spiritual unawareness. Also, various beliefs, whether rationalized or not, in the efficacy, the value of purely external acts. Now, this might seem rather to be flogging a dead horse. Probably is, so far as most people here are concerned. But having spent 20 years in India, having seen so much of popular Hinduism, it doesn't seem to me that this is so much of a dead horse in at least other parts of the world. Even now, there are very many Hindus, Orthodox Hindus, who genuinely believe that the waters of the Ganges, for instance, have a very definitely purifying effect. And if you take a dip in those waters, then your sins will really be washed away. You're probably surprised to hear that quite educated, intelligent Hindus, some of them Western educated, will quite seriously and quite honestly defend this belief. Reminds me of a little story about Ramakrishna, the great Hindu mystic at the end of the last century. He was once asked about this. Is it true, as the Orthodox say, that when you take a dip in the Ganges, all your sins are washed away? Now, he didn't like to offend the feelings of the Orthodox, at the same time he didn't like to commit himself to the orthodox belief. So he said to the questioner, "Yes, it's quite true. When you take a dip in the sacred Ganges, all your sins are washed away." He said, "But when you go down into the water, they take the form of crows, and they perch on the trees nearby. And when you come out of the water, they come back again." So, this is how he got round this difficulty. But it does reflect the tendency of people to attach importance to external acts. Really, one might say in the West, the whole Reformation conducted by Luther was really about this question. Whether a purely mechanical external observance, in this case the whole question of indulgences and the sacramental side of religion generally, had a value of their own. You probably know, for instance, that in those days it was one of the teachings of the Church, I think it still is in fact, of the Catholic Church, that the sinfulness of the priest in no way impairs the efficacy of the sacrament. The priest can be as sinful as you like, but when he performs the sacrament, because he utters certain words in a certain way, the efficacy is unimpaired. So Luther protested against this sort of external view of religion. And it still is quite strong in certain quarters. Only very recently I was reading an account, several accounts, of the proceedings of the two recent Vatican councils. And it's quite clear that in the councils there were two groups of fathers participating. One group, a smaller group, admittedly wanted to hang on to all the old mechanical, external, ritualistic ways of regarding religion, and the other more progressive fathers wanting to abolish them or at least modify them. So this is a permanent element, it seems, in the religious character, if we're not careful. Trying to treat things which are external, as well as actions and ceremonies and rituals and sacraments, as possessing efficacy and value by themselves, quite apart from the state of mind with which they are performed. So this sort of belief, this sort of conviction, though ostensibly religious, is really a part of avidya, a part of ignorance, a part of spiritual unawareness. Also, one can say above all, unawareness, spiritual unawareness, includes ignorance of the law of universal conditionality itself, of which the conditioned co-production or dependent origination is the exemplification. Metaphorically, as I've already indicated, we can say that avidya represents a state of mental and spiritual darkness or lack of illumination.